Welcome to Hawk Weekly.
Hello everyone, I'm Jonathan.
I'm Crystal.
And this is Haunt Weekly, a weekly podcast for the haunted attraction and haunted entertainment industry. Whether you're an actor, owner, or just plain aficionado, we aim to be a podcast for you, and this is a very special week.
Yes, it is.
If we sound a little different, it's because we're not just two morons in a room talking into a microphone that's being recorded. We have a guest this week who comes from a land afar.
Yes.
Joining us... us New Orleanians all the way from the great state of Kentucky is Holly Chrysler. Chrysler.
We should have asked that.
We should have asked that before we got on the air, actually. Realizations here. Holly, how's it going?
And can you please correct it? It's going really well.
Better for you than us, it sounds like. Holy God.
Hey, that's okay. You all are not the first people to get my last name wrong. It's Chrysler, but that's okay.
Chrysler.
Okay. Yeah. Not associated with the car at all.
Not another.
Absolutely not.
Sounds like some bad blood there. We won't delve into that. We won't. So anyways, Holly, thank you very much for joining us. As we mentioned in previous episodes, we want to do a mini series or series. We don't know how long this is going to go.
It depends on how many people we can have on.
About women and haunting. This is something that's a passionate subject for both of us.
Right.
And eager to talk to women who've had success in haunting and get their experiences. So in an act untypical of Haunt Weekly, I'm going to largely shut my mouth. And I will relegate myself to asking questions as much as possible, but I'm very curious. So, Holly, tell us a little bit about your background.
Well, I got started working in the haunt business in 1994. At the time, there was just a couple of major haunts in the Louisville area, and the owner came into my place of employment one day placing an ad looking for actors, and I thought, wow, I've always kind of wanted to do this. This sounds like fun.
Yeah.
And I was with this particular haunt. This was the Haunted Hotel in Louisville, Kentucky, and I was with them for 6 years. And I started out as just an actress, and then the owner realized, hey, this girl has some artistic talents. So I started doing some set design and some costume design as well.
Oh, that's very good.
Yeah.
It's nice of him to recognize talent when he saw it and, you know, promote that. So we've, you know, it's not always seen. It's not always appreciated.
And that's, I've seen plenty of haunters of all stripes go for years in the same role and want to do more but unable to break out. So it's really cool that they were able to do that for you.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So I was with them for 6 years, and in 99, the owner sold the business, and the new owner came in, and things just weren't the same. You know, the energy, the environment wasn't the same, so I thought, okay, I'm done.
Right.
And through a network of friends, I found this other haunt, which is in New Albany, Indiana, and that's just across the river from Louisville, Kentucky. And I started there in 2001. And within 3 years, the guy who was running that decided he wanted to step down and spend more time with his kids. And he said, do you want to take over? And I nervously thought about it and like, okay, sure.
Maybe.
Give this a try.
We can do this.
So is this where you're at now?
I ran the haunt. It's called literally a haunted house at the Culbertson Mansion in New Albany, Indiana. I ran it for several years. A couple of years ago, I stepped down. This is a very overwhelming job. It consumes you. It takes all of your free time.
Yes.
And luckily, my best friend Gary had been my partner for years. So he and I just sat down and had a talk, and I said, would you like to take over? Because I really need a break. And he did, and it's still a partnership, even though in name he's in charge. He and I discuss everything democratically with our design team, so I'm still very much heavily involved.
That's very cool.
Very cool. And to clarify, this is a haunted attraction at a year-round place.
Yeah, the place is a state historic site. It's a Victorian mansion, absolutely gorgeous. And this haunted attraction is a volunteer effort, is a fundraiser. The money we raise goes to the interior restoration of this mansion. After 150, 160 years, a lot of things need repair. So the money we raise goes to keeping this place looking as beautiful as it did 160 years ago.
Very, very cool. Yeah. And I got to say, that sounds like, you know, ambiance nailed. You can check that one off the box for a haunted attraction, right? The...
Yeah.
Lucky, lucky you. Every haunter who has to turn a garage or a,
yeah,
a metal building is envious.
Oh, yeah. Well, we've got, ours is, our haunt is set up in the old carriage house,
ooh,
which is not, because it's three stories. It's a sturdy structure. And because it's on state property, the state upholds the outside, like the roof and the exterior walls. The inside is pretty much up to us. So we can go in there and deconstruct and build up every year however we want to.
Very nice. That's cool. You still have to get all of the permits and things, though, correct?
Oh, yeah, the fire marshal still has to walk through and check the wiring and measure the door frames and, you know, look for things that might be loose or tripping hazards. So, yeah, right, we are still under all the regulations that any other haunt would be.
Absolutely.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's just when you say, we could do whatever we want, and I'm thinking, I know some home haunters who think that, and they probably shouldn't.
Yeah, we're very wary of fire code violations, and we keep our places safe as we can.
Yeah, that's the way we try to do it, too. Safety first.
So. Yes.
So what's been your favorite scare that you've put on, or your favorite set that you've designed?
Oh, wow. Oh, gosh. There's been so many, because I love designing sets. I love making rooms look as realistic as possible.
Yeah.
Right now, in fact, I just finished doing a room that is like a decontamination room for radiation sickness.
Nice.
And, you know, it's decorated to look like rusty walls with the, you know, minerals and stuff dripping down the walls. There's rust, there's holes, there's old dirty air vents, there's radiation signs. So I'm really happy with how that looks. Yeah. But gosh, we've had so many great ideas and so many rooms that were just incredible. All somebody has to do is toss me an idea and the gears start turning. And I'm like, okay, I want to do it in this color. I want to have these type props. I want to have this type lighting.
Yeah.
So they're all fun. It's hard to narrow down to just one.
I understand that completely.
Yes. Okay, so obviously this is about women and haunting.
Yeah.
There is a perception, at least, that haunting is something of a boys' club.
Yeah.
Has that been your experience, or how is that connect, that at least that idea, you know, jive with what you've seen?
You know, 20 years ago, that was very true. When I started at the Haunted Hotel in the mid-90s, my first year, I was one of two girls.
Yeah.
And the rest of the team were all guys. There was 20 or 30 of us, and there's two girls. It was a sausage fest.
Right.
But by the time I left there, there was about six, seven, maybe eight females working. So it had increased. The haunt that I'm at now, when I started there, same thing. There's maybe, you know, eight or nine girls, and it's all guys.
Right.
The past couple of years, it is really 50-50 now. There's a lot of girls who are interested doing haunts. They're fans of horror films. They're not, you know, squeaky little girls that are scared of everything. They love the horror genre, whether it's movies, books, or TV. They love doing makeup. They love doing costumes. Some of these girls, as actresses, would just knock your socks off. They're amazing. So I'm thrilled to see how balanced the haunt industry has become between male and female. It really is 50-50 now.
Yeah, and I actually noticed just within the past year going to the haunt cons that last year, there weren't as many women represented as there were this year. You know, I noticed that walking around, which was really pleasant.
Do you think there's a reason that it's grown so quickly? I mean, this is a trend we like to encourage, so any reasons that it's been happening would be nice to at least ponder on so we can further encourage it.
I think, and this is definitely true in our area, it may be true in other areas of the country, the haunt industry has exploded. 20 years ago, there were maybe 2 or 3 haunts in the area. In our area alone, there's at least 15.
Wow.
So it has just, there's so many different haunts to go to, and each one has their own theme and their own style. And with that, I think more girls and more women have gotten more interested in this. You don't always have to play the victim anymore, you know, the girl tied to the sacrificial rack screaming. You can be the antagonist. You can be the villain. And, you know, even in some movies, that cliche of the girls always being the victim is kind of going by the wayside. You know, even with TV shows, you're seeing more women who are the villains and not just the victims anymore. So I'm happy to see that.
Me too. We've been underrepresented.
Absolutely.
Sorry, there's a little sleep going on here, but that's okay. So what was your first acting role then, at the first time?
My very first role.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
I wasn't even in costume and makeup. I was laying in a drop ceiling, which was made of plexiglass.
Uh-huh.
And when people walked underneath me, I would, like, beat on it and scream and yell, so I was right over their heads, so everybody just dropped.
Nice.
It was fun. I got bruised.
Hold on, I'm writing down some notes here on the scare. Hang on. It's going to take a minute.
I got bruised and battered at the end of the season, but I didn't care. It was just so fun laying on this plexiglass ceiling, just beating the hell out of it and just watching people drop.
That is a great one. And I'm glad that your first role was a scare role.
Yeah. Oh, I didn't want to be a victim. Oh, being a victim is so... And that's not challenging, you know?
Right.
You just sit there and scream and beg for help. No, I want to get in there. I want to be a part of the action.
Yeah.
Well, there are some people that really do enjoy those victim roles because they get to interact in a way that the scare actors don't. They get to, like, really, like, continue the theatrics a little bit longer than...
Oh, absolutely.
So some, especially the thespians, it seems, really enjoys victim roles.
But yeah.
Yeah. There has been a tendency at a lot of haunts we've worked at and been through to think, you know, what we have a girl, she automatically is some kind of victim. As you said, she's on this operating table, she's on the rack, she's on, you know, she's in the killer's lair screaming, "Don't go in there," or whatever. There's a tendency to do exactly that. I mean, it's one of the reasons we started this conversation about women and haunting was the realization that so many haunts, it seems, use women exclusively either in victim or sexy roles.
And yes.
That's really frustrating and annoying to us.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you mentioned the sexy roles. That's frustrating to me. Now, I'm a straight female, but I'm also a former art student, so I've seen a lot of naked people.
Right.
Naked people don't bother me.
Yeah.
But if I go into a haunt, and this is the same with seeing a horror film, as soon as the boobies pop out, you've lost my interest and you've lost my respect.
Yeah.
So now you're titillating me. And, you know, if I want to watch porn, I'll watch porn. But if I want to go be scared, I want you to scare me.
Yeah.
I don't want to see boobies.
And that's my problem as a heterosexual male. I do enjoy boobies, I'm not going to lie. But the fact of the matter is like you said, I'm not there to be titillated. I'm there. And one of the reasons a lot of haunts do it is they want to have that emotional roller coaster. They want to take you somewhere away from being scared from which they can scare you again. That's fine. I understand that. But titillation's not necessarily the way to do that. You can lay off the gas for a minute and bring people back into a comfort zone for a moment and then hit them again. There's better ways to do it than to offer up half-naked or fully naked women. I mean,
yeah.
And like you said, it doesn't work on everyone going through the haunt. What about gay men? What about straight women? What about, you know, immediately, at least, you know, approximately half, give or take, of your audience is going to not be impacted very strongly by that.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
So, that's been one of our big frustrations with women in haunting. And we've seen this in haunts we've worked at and in haunts that we've gone to. Mm-hmm. It's just that idea that women have to be pigeonholed into these roles. And I'm glad that your experience was nothing like that.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's the owner of the Haunted Hotel was great. And he actually let me work security for a while. And, you know, being a girl who gets to do security, wow, I was impressed and I was flattered that he let me do that.
Right.
And even at our haunt now, we have rovers of both genders. And I just, you know, have a rule. It's just like keep an eye on the patrons, make sure they don't get out of hand. You know, you're big enough to defend yourself and you're mature enough to handle the situation if these people get out of control. And I don't care if you're male or female, as long as you're there to do your job.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the perfect attitude to have.
and that's the reason why I think diversity is so important to this industry, is because this is how you get the best scares and the best actors and the best builders and the costume designers, is you have that attitude of, if you can do the job, you've got the job.
Yes, yes.
That's how we hire the best, is by throwing the doors open.
Yeah.
So, You talked a little bit about how you got interested in haunting. What has been your experience recruiting other girls or getting other women involved? Has it been a similar thing where they've had that fascination and you just simply give them the opportunity?
Or yeah, it been really convincing? Is. Yeah, with our haunt, it's word of mouth. They tell their friends and their friends tell their friends and all these people show up to help out.
Right.
And it's because we're weird people, face it. We are the oddball. You know, we were the weirdo nerds in high school and college, and we're the goth kids, and we love horror movies and Vincent Price and the Addams Family and all that. And it's just word of mouth, and you get these people who are really into Halloween. They're really into costuming. They're really into the dark, spooky aspect of it. And when they find out that there's a haunt where they can go and express themselves, whether that's acting in a role or making a costume or doing someone's makeup or building a set or putting together a prop, it's a joy to them. They love doing this, and it's just a great way to express themselves and be part of the moment and part of the season. Yeah, it's a beautiful thing.
That's really nice. How many visitors do you get on average per year there?
Oh, gosh. We probably get 3,000 to 5,000, which doesn't sound like a lot. Now, we're a smaller haunt. There's other haunts in the area that are these big commercial monsters, and they right. get 10, 15, 20,000 a year. But we're happy with that. And, yeah. and even with our clientele, it's word of mouth. We've been around since the late 80s, and it's an establishment and it's a tradition. And some people who visited our haunt in the 80s and 90s grew up, had kids, and now they're bringing their kids through. So it's become a great tradition.
Right. That's always nice to see that we've got something similar going on here.
Yeah, we've been at our same place for 11 years now. And
yeah, this will be our 11th season.
So it's interesting, nice. Like you said, to see the teens and the kids that came by and now bringing theirs through. They usually go through the little kiddie area right now. But,
right.
But, you know, it's still interesting to see the family tradition being passed down like that.
Right. And they're also, you know, coming back and saying, hey, I'm old enough. Can I work now?
Yes.
We've had a lot of that. That's always a lot of fun. And then it's like you said, that's how you recruit. Word of mouth is the way mm-hmm. to go, which it makes it kind of weird for me that some haunts seem to be such boys' clubs, and then others seem to, you know, be more diverse. And I think one of the things you talked about, this is something I've been thinking about, is you, like you said, when you started at your first haunt, total boys' club, total sausage fest, as you said. Yeah. But mm-hmm. you being there, you getting more involved, and you having a more active role in it, things started, you know, evening out. And I think a lot of that is, you know, sometimes with these boys' clubs, you need someone to cross the line and sort of start the trend. And I think that happens at some haunts. I've seen it happen at some haunts locally, where a couple of women stick it out. They join the boys' club. They hang with the boys. They scare as good as them. And then other women see that and then immediately want to on board, too.
I'm going to agree with you on that. I think that really is how it happens. I was never treated as an inferior. I wasn't treated as, like, a sex pot or a girl or, you know, I'm there to get a boyfriend. That was never my intention. And the guys there knew that. And they just treated me as part of the team. And like you said, girls who come in and stick it out and say, okay, I'm not here to be the sex pot or to be the bimbo. I'm here to work. I'm here to scare people. I think some guys build up a lot of respect for that. Because, hey, here's somebody that is, it's one of our own. They're equal to us, and they're here to, you know, work just as hard as we are. And when more girls see that, yeah, you're right. It's inspiring, and there's a lot of respect there.
Yeah, it's very interesting because I think a lot of the haunts that are boys' clubs aren't that way intentionally. It's not like they're all misogynistic, you know, chauvinistic pigs who don't want women in the haunt. Maybe because, you know, it starts out as a group of male friends, maybe, and that's how it builds and snowballs. Maybe they never found a way, a good way to reach out and recruit more women haunters.
Yeah.
I don't think it's necessarily sex, at least not every haunt. It can't be for every haunt.
Yeah, hopefully not for every haunt.
Oh, jeez, if it is.
Yeah, I have worked in those types of haunts where
we've been in some haunts that are actively, I would say, have a sexist culture, and that's very difficult.
Right.
Yeah.
There were a couple of haunts in our area that had scenes that bordered on the offensive when it came to their treatment of women.
Wow.
And either they're not around anymore or they have new managers or new owners. A lot of us in the area that own or operate haunts, we're all friends. We all talk.
Oh, yeah.
Right.
And, you know, it's friendly competition, but I'd say most of the haunts in the area will treat their female employees or volunteers equally. Like I said, there were a couple in the area that were kind of sexist, but either we don't associate with them, we don't talk, or they're gone. So.
Well, one way to get them out of there.
Well, and one of the things is, when you have those scenes, when you have that those elements that are sexist and misogynistic, it turns off your female, you know, your potential female customers, too. And
right.
It essentially halves your potential audience.
And right. Word will get around.
Oh, yeah,
you know,
absolutely.
Oh, guess what? There's a haunt in the area that has a stripper scene. Well, yeah, you're going to attract a lot of guys, but their girlfriends ain't going to come with them.
Right.
You just turned away half of your potential customers because most girls are not going to want to go and haunt and see a stripper. So,
yeah.
You know, and it's like you pointed out, it's not just that you turned away the girls, you turned away the girls and the people that would be coming with them.
Right.
Like I said, no girl's going to go with her boyfriend, and of course, that's the reason you go to a haunted attraction, is to show your girl how tough you are and don't get scared and haunted. No stinky
haunted houses haunted houses are great places for dates because you're going to get some physical contact. If your girlfriend is scared and she grabs onto you, hey, there you go.
Yeah.
If you're a girl and you're going with a guy, you get to grab onto him and show him how strong you are. It's a win-win situation.
Or, as happened with us once, a guy offered up his tiny little girlfriend to the monster.
Yeah.
And when he got scared, I think that relationship might have ended that night, actually. So maybe it's not always a definite.
Yes. In that case, it's like a litmus test.
Yeah,
it's like, okay, let's see if this guy's going to be a good boyfriend or not. Oh, he's using me as a human shield? Well, this date is over.
Yeah.
Throw me under the bus, will you? Tell the Jabberwocky to eat me.
Oh, gosh. Yeah.
So, I'm glad that your experiences were overall very, very positive.
Yeah.
What are some things you think haunts could do to make themselves more open and more accommodating to women? I mean, obviously treat them as equals is the big one, but there are other things you think they could do.
I think definitely getting rid of the sexy aspect of it, you know, having girls scantily clad, you know, some girls can do that with a problem, but I think that just, it marginalizes females. It once again, it turns them into victims only. It doesn't give them a chance to play the other side of the fence and be the aggressor.
Right.
You know, you can be offensive in a haunt in some ways, you know, as far as like touching or grabbing. Don't grab women in their private areas. I know there's some that do that, and it's like, now you're bordering on sexual assault. That's really not cool.
No, not at all.
I don't think that's bordering on sexual assault.
So,
I think it just
that is sexual assault.
Yeah. Was that the customers or the actresses who were having that you saw?
I've heard of some of the more intense haunts where they like reach out and grab you. You know, some girls' boobs were getting touched, and you know that's not gonna fly. That's really not cool. You got to watch where those hands go.
Yeah, no kidding.
Well, the old adage about don't touch the bathing suit areas. I think applies to that. If you're going to be, we did the thing about the no touch versus touch haunts, and about ways to incorporate touch without actually putting yourself at risk of a sexual assault lawsuit.
Yeah.
Which that the things that we talked about in that episode were things like use feathers and props to do the touching, rather than your hands.
Yeah. Are you at a no touch or a touch haunt?
We used to be a no touch, but now we do some. But I go through a very rigorous training with everybody before we start. I'm like, okay, your safe areas are ankles, knees, and shoulders. That's it. Don't touch heads. Don't touch faces. Don't touch torsos. It's shoulders, ankles, and knees. That's all. So we make sure we stay very far away from anybody's intimate areas.
Yes. Yeah, that sounds like perfect setup.
Yeah, that sounds like a very good approach to it. Now, can I ask you a question? Why did you decide to go from doing no touch to adding a touch element?
Two reasons. Peer pressure. A lot of other haunts in the area were doing it, and we're like, well, we got to step up our game. Mm-hmm. And also reactions. You have a lot of people who come in who are scared, and in dealing with their fear, they're shouting at the actors, you can't touch me, you can't touch me. Well, guess what we're going to do now? We're going to touch you. So it was that added element of surprise and that turning up the volume on the scare factor. You know, now I'm going to touch you. It may just be your shoulder, it may just be your hand, but I'm going to touch you because you told me not to.
That's actually very valid.
That's a point I hadn't thought about. We didn't talk about in that episode was that there is that boundary there, that safe zone that so many people hide behind when they're going to a haunt.
Right.
And breaking it can have a lot of power.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But you have to do it, like you said, in a safe way. Have you had any problems since you changed the policy?
Very few. There have been some people who got a little irate and they said, well, your website said you weren't touched. And it's like, well, when's the last time you checked the website? Last year, we took that down. And no, we do touch now. And, I like dealing with people who get angry about that because I'll just like take my finger and touch their shoulder and just go boop. And, you know, just to say, look, I broke your boundary, and look how silly I was being, therefore look how silly you're being by overreacting. And that usually turns their anger down quite a bit, just to throw some humor in there and kind of get them to calm down. But other than a few angry parents, and we've been able to talk them down to say, look, this is what we do now, and that's been it. It hasn't gotten out of hand.
Good. That's good to hear.
And do you have line actors there who are now saying are on your rules outside that you post?
Yeah, we have
touch.
Yeah, we updated our website to make that perfectly clear.
Right.
We have signs where people buy tickets, and we also have sign. We have a large tent that's our waiting area. We have a sign there as well. And whoever is managing the main tent, who's taking tickets, goes over the rules. And says, you know, you might be touched, you're not going to be grabbed, you're not going to be assaulted, and no one's going to get in your face. But be prepared, you know, you might get a brush on the arm, a brush on the leg. So people are told up front, expect that this might happen.
I'm surprised that you're getting complaints then.
Well, you know, sometimes alcohol is involved, and they have a short-term memory.
Gotcha.
Some people will complain about just about anything, let's be honest.
Yeah, because if it were just the signs, then I could say, you know, people don't read, but you're telling them too, so they should know.
Right.
Yeah, this is reaching new levels of stupidity, but levels I'm not prepared to discuss on this podcast. But yeah. So, when you took over for the haunt, when you made that nervous leap, and I love the sound in your voice that you just made, because I could hear the emotion in that, and I understand that emotion at the same time.
Yeah.
What were some of the changes that you did implement? What were some of the things you immediately looked to address?
I'm kind of anal retentive. And not to say anything bad about the guy who ran the haunt before me, but it was very chaotic. And that chaos worked for him. It didn't work for me. I need to have order. I need to have lists. I need to have numbers.
Yeah.
So I start writing stuff down. I start assigning roles and having cast lists. I wanted people to show up at a certain time. Once you were assigned a room, that's your room for the night. Don't be running all over the house jumping in other people's scenes. So, it took me a few years to get that established. And those first few years were rough. You know, a lot of people left when I took over, and it wasn't a hatred thing. It was just they were loyal to the guy who ran the place before me, and they didn't want to stick around. So we kind of scrambled for cast. But once those the rules and the rigidity kind of kicked in, it got better. It got better. It just took a few years to take off.
Yeah, that's really the way we run things here, too, or try to, is that we have a cast list. We get with them months in advance to see what nights they're able to work and what, you know, you grow with them over time and find out.
Right.
You know, who's reliable and who's going to work in what role.
Yeah.
And we've actually lost some really good people just because they weren't reliable and couldn't be there on time.
And that's always sad when you lose a talented actor or a talented makeup person or whatever simply because of a reliability issue.
Yeah. I was just going to say the same thing. It's heartbreaking when you've got somebody who's really good as an artist, as an actor, and they get married and have a kid, or they join the military, or they go off to college, or, you know, they change jobs and now they're working third shift. But we understand. And even though you can't make it this season, you're still part of our family, and you're always welcome to come back, even if it's just for one night.
Yeah.
That's really a nice way to go about it.
Yeah. So, when you were having to scramble and recruit those actors, what approach did you take?
We contacted some drama departments for some local universities. I told everybody, tell your friends, tell your family, see if there's other people who are interested, and that really worked. Once again, the word of mouth. Mm-hmm. You know, people like hanging out with their friends, and they like working with their friends. So if they could get their friends involved and work in the same room as their friends, it kind of blossomed from there. That was pretty much it. That's what got it out there, telling everybody.
And that's kind of what we've noticed, is that the best recruiter for new actors for us is our current actors at the end of the day. Mm-hmm. And I think that's one of the reasons, also going back to the women... getting more women actors, I think that's one of the reasons why it snowballs over time, is because once you've got once you have a small sort of beachhead of women actors, they'll recruit their friends, they'll get other people that are like-minded, and then it will grow from there.
Yeah.
So I think that's a powerful component to it.
Absolutely.
And what age range are your actors?
We have got a very wide spectrum. A lot of haunts in the area don't want anybody under 18 for legal reasons. Because we're volunteers, we don't care. As long as you behave yourself, show up, and do a good job, that's all that matters. We have had volunteers as young as 11, and our oldest volunteers are in their mid-50s. So it's broad. And the 11 and 12 year old kids, they're well behaved. I mean, for preteens, they're amazing. I absolutely love them. And you get them in costumes and they just act their little hearts out. They're incredible.
What kind of roles do you put them in, the youngest ones?
Usually creepy children roles. There's something about creepy children that make people really unsettled.
Yes. Well, children are just creepy naturally. I mean, that's...
Yeah! But they love... They absolutely love... For them, it's the one moment they have power. It's right. The one moment they have got control over the adults, and they love it. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, creepy children roles... little monsters, little demons, zombies. You know, zombie children are just amazing to work with. They're fun to watch, and our clientele and our customers really love them.
I bet they're fast, too.
Yes, they run their little butts off.
Well, I mean, that's one thing. You can always trust the energy of a child.
Yes.
Because there's, like, one haunt here in Southeast Louisiana, where there's a kid, and he can't be older than, like, 10 or 11.
He started out very young.
But, yeah, he's a little older now, but I remember the one I'm thinking of. He operates 6 different drop panels in a cemetery scene. I after a few hours of doing one, hate my life.
Yeah.
And question my choices. This kid, year after year, has been operating 6 in a graveyard scene, and a little, like, because there's a portion of it that snakes around, like a center mausoleum thing, and you come back by it multiple times. And yeah, he operates, including, like, sometimes 2 in a row, one right after. I can't do that, man. I don't have that. I'm too old.
We've locked some of our younger people in closets, in cages that are really small, but they're small, so they fit.
Right.
And they can pop open doors and burst through cages all night long and never get bored.
Yeah. Never get bored, never get tired.
Yeah.
Now, do you make sure their parent or guardian is somewhere in the room or nearby?
Yeah, and when they volunteer for us, they do sign a release form, and they have to have mom and dad or their legal guardian sign it to say, yes, my kid is here, I'm fully aware of their responsibilities, it's okay with us. Some of their parents actually help out, whether they're acting in the house or they're helping with concessions or ticket sales. You know, sometimes mom and dad join in the fun, so... For a couple of families, it's a family affair for them every October to join us.
Right. Yeah, we've got a family here, too, and
yeah, we have
that
a couple
well.
Of families that help with us. So, yeah. So, when it comes to promoting your haunt, you say you promote mostly through word of mouth.
Mm-hmm.
Any other approaches that you take? Anything else that you do? Because I'm thinking that since you are a nonprofit haunt, you're raising money for a charity, you've probably got some interesting budget marketing tips for all of us out there.
Yeah, we've got a tiny budget, but we have learned to be very creative within that budget. Several years ago, we used to put together a media kit that we sent to all the newspapers, and it had photos, it had a CD, it had a press release, it had a free pass for a reporter and a friend to come through, but that was 10, 15 years ago. Nobody reads newspapers anymore. Commercial radio is dead. Everybody's listening to Pandora or Sirius. So we've discovered in the past couple years that social media is the way to go. We have a very active Facebook page. We have a website. We do a Groupon every year for discounted tickets. On our Facebook page, we post virtual coupons that you can download to your phone and show it at the ticket booth. So that has really been a big plus for us, is social media and Groupon.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah, Groupon's kind of a controversial subject among haunters. Some haunts really love it, and some... Now it feels quite the opposite, it seems.
Yeah.
You won't make a lot of money with Groupon, but you're going to get people coming to your haunt who've never heard of you, who have never been to your place. And once again, that word of mouth, if it's a new customer and they come through and they like you, they're going to go home and tell everybody about it.
Yeah, I agree. We do that quite often whenever we buy those. Is that, hey, we went to this great place. Somebody come with us.
Yeah,
so we can tell you.
So, Yeah. And sometimes we'll even go back and bring new people with us. So
yeah,
exactly. Yeah, haunts definitely can pay off. It's just I think it's situation dependent for many haunts. If you don't really need to reach out to new people, if you're one of those big, heavily commercial haunts, for example, where everybody already knows your name,
yes,
a Groupon may not behoove you because you don't have much to gain. You're just giving away low price tickets.
Yeah, it might help you out on your opening weekends when business is slow and you just want to fill the house. But yeah, for a commercial haunt, they don't need that. But for us, you know, budgetary wise, it doesn't cost us a lot. And it gets a lot of new faces in the door. And we did it for the first time last year. And when we saw the numbers, we're like, wow, we got to do this again.
Nice. I'm glad it worked out for you. Out. Yeah. So what is, I assume, maybe I shouldn't assume, that you've gone through other haunted houses.
Oh, yes.
That you visit them.
Hey, you'd be surprised at the number of haunters that almost never go through other haunted houses.
Yeah.
Because we're all working during season.
Yeah, we're all working at the same time, so it's hard to go visit our friends at the haunt down the street.
Right. Yeah, there's that. We've actually had a couple of actors who were scared to go through haunted houses but wanted to scare people. You know,
they like being in the power, but they didn't want to be the victim, be the customer.
Right.
I encountered that same thing with some of my people. It's like, you do so well in this room. Why don't you want to go with us when we go visit this other place? Like, oh no, I can't handle it. It's like, what's wrong with you?
Yeah.
You are the ghost in the closet.
Yeah.
You are the creature that goes bump in the night. What is your problem?
No, I visited a lot of haunts in our area. Like I said, we're all friends and we all know each other. Right. And we all offer each other free nights. It's like, come see what we're doing. So I get to see what the other haunts are doing. I've been to some out of state. I've been to some in Ohio. I've been to the House of Shock in New Orleans. It was many years ago, but I'd love to go back.
Right.
So, yeah. I just like to see what everybody else is doing, not to steal ideas, but just to enjoy what other people are coming up with. And there's a lot of respect there when somebody comes up with a new scare or a new set or a new idea or a new twist on an old idea. I love that. I really do.
Yeah, that's always really nice. So what has been your favorite scare that you have seen someone else do since we've heard a little bit about yours?
There's two that come to mind. One was when I went to House of Shock in 2001. They had a room that was painted solid black, and on one wall they had that horrific face that from The Exorcist that flashes on screen for like a second.
Right.
Had a slow-acting strobe in this room so that it popped like every 3 or 4 seconds and you just saw that face. So you walk in, you see that face, nothing happens. The next time you see this face, there's somebody in a black morph suit who's like right up on you. And it totally got me. I was not expecting that. And it was a simple gag, but it was so effective.
Yeah.
Right. And
black morph suits are very, very powerful things.
Oh, because they're wonderful camouflage. You never see them coming.
That is still, to this day, my favorite costume as an actor is a black morph suit. I love the sneaky, because I'm not particularly physically intimidating, and I'm not super good at shouting, especially over long periods of time. So give me a black morph suit, let me sneak up on people.
They are a lot of fun.
Anyway,
scare that I liked was, it was either last year or year before last, we went to the Dent School in Cincinnati, and there was a room that was set up like a public shower, like a gym shower, and there's water coming out of the shower heads, and you're walking along this waffle grid floor.
Right.
And you see some bodies, you know, wrapped in plastic that are just laying there. Well, all of a sudden, here comes this rather overweight guy with just a towel around his waist. And he's wet, and he's gross, and he just starts yelling at you. He was so well camouflaged, once again, I didn't see him coming. So as soon as he walks out from underneath that shower and starts yelling, I was just like, oh, okay, you got me.
It's always great to talk about the scares that work.
Right.
And it's always fun because you know as an actor that person probably had to try that 100 times before they really nailed it.
Yeah.
They first got it really wrong, then they got it less wrong, and then improved it until they got it really, really right.
Yeah.
The things like those types of timing and camouflage scares do not come together over in one night.
Yeah.
They take a lot of time.
Not. So yeah, so whenever I go through a haunt and somebody gets me, you know, and they do a really good job, I will tell them, you rock. That was great. You keep that up.
Yeah, we do something similar.
Yeah, I know that we're frustrating because we're haunters, and I'm pretty sure you do this too, where you don't, like, have the big reactions to scares, but you can still get God. It's not that you're not getting God. It's just that you don't have that over-the-top, visceral reaction that haunters love. So whenever we get God, we like to say, that was awesome. Just shake my hand, please.
Yes.
We want to let them know, even if we didn't, like, react appropriately. Because I might go, might be the actual, like, might be the actual scare reaction.
That was pretty cool.
Because in addition to, you know, the reaction, I'm also sitting there going, the tactics of that was incredible. The use of the distract and the startle.
Yeah.
I'm laying out how the scare came together in my head. Like kind of like the audience trying to figure out how the magician did a trick. It's a similar
puzzle.
Okay. Well, we've only got a few more minutes right now, but so to wrap things up and bring things back to the original topic for a moment here, what do you think are some ways that haunts that are wanting to get more women involved, what do you think they can and should do to encourage it?
We're in the new millennium. Let's get rid of old stereotypes. Let's get rid of the girls always being the sexy victim. Let's let girls take over some of the protagonist roles. Let's hand them the chainsaw instead of the big guy. Let's let them put on full facial makeup and disguise herself so that when this monster approaches you, you don't know if it's male or female and you don't care. It's just scaring the hell out of you.
Yeah.
Give them more opportunities that don't pigeonhole them into the traditional victim role. And, I think that's the big ones right there.
I think that's great advice. And I think that also you mentioned that the whole community up there tries to do that. And I think that's an important role too, because if you're able to get away with it at one haunt and not have any reprimand for it, then other haunts might follow suit.
So. My best scares that I ever got is when I was fully costumed as a gargoyle and nobody knew I was male or female, and removing the gender out of the monster made it all the more fun because it kept people guessing.
Yeah.
I can see that, yeah.
Yeah.
It's always interesting because when you get someone new, trying to figure out where they fit in into the haunt and what they can do, there's always a little bit of trial and error. Because, like, when we had Coup a few years ago, remember him?
Right.
This kid weighs 95 pounds, soaking wet. He's 5 foot nothing. He's tiny as heck. And he's so soft-spoken.
Yeah.
That I'm like, I don't know what we're going to do with this kid, but he really wants to be in the haunt. And he's a really good artist, and he designed a lot of the scenes in the set, so he's going to be in, right? We're trying to figure it out. He's like, oh, just put me in the cage and I'll scare people. I'll find a way to scare people. He had so much energy and so much reckless abandon in that cage. We're A, having to repair the cage every night.
Yeah.
That's A. And we built that pretty well, too. I'm really impressed. But also, everyone's like, damn, did we need to help that kid?
Yeah.
They're leaving because of the way he was acting. So, yeah, it's always fascinating because when you listen to people and what they say they can do, usually they're right.
Yeah. Yeah, give people an opportunity to express themselves. And we encourage that at our own haunt. When we start designing in the spring, you know, I tell people, okay, if you want to do a room like this, tell me what kind of props you want. Tell me what color do you want it? What kind of lighting? What kind of sound do you want? How do you want your costume to look? And I'll help them, but I will let them develop this on their own. And we have learned, wow, when you let people do that, that room turns out awesome. Just step back and let them go, and you get some incredible results.
Well,
absolutely. And I think that's true for every haunter, male, female, young and old, and so on and so forth. This is how you get people passionate about haunting and about your haunt in particular.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I think this is a lot of great advice here about getting women involved in haunting. And I'm super glad that your narrative is a positive one.
Yes.
I know many women who have had less than positive ones.
Yes.
Oh, and my heart goes out to them. I am so sorry they had to go through all that.
But, you know, I think you have got a story here that can be used as an example for how other haunts can be inclusive and can bring people, not just women, but all types of people into the community. And that's one of the things is, and it's like when I don't know if you heard about the whole Ohio Valley Haunts thing.
I was very much involved in that.
Okay, I thought you were. I didn't want to speak for you.
And I wanted to thank you guys for bringing that to the public's attention, because when that first broke, and there was originally just 7 of us discussing this, and it blossomed into like 30 or 40, we were shocked. We were horrified. We're like, really? Do they not realize that the haunt business is a haven for lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender people? I mean, we're just a couple of steps away from Broadway musicals. We are the most flamboyant bunch. Yeah. You know, how dare you say things about that when you're wanting to get into our haunts for free? Are you serious?
Yeah. And it's interesting because we are, like we were talking about earlier, we are the marginalized peoples.
Yes.
All together. Whether you're marginalized because your sexuality, your race, your class status,
your
obsession with Vincent Price.
Yeah.
whatever marginalizes you from society, if you love haunting, you're in our family. That's how this industry
absolutely
works.
Absolutely. Yeah, I don't care who you're voting for in the election. You're a haunt person. Come over here and give me a hug. You're family.
Yeah.
In fact, the mere fact you survived this election tells me you're ready for some horror.
Yeah.
You know, but in all honesty, thank you very much for your work and bringing that to the public attention. And thank you for spending the past hour with us.
Yeah.
It has been quite wonderful, and I'm very, very,
very
glad you had such a positive experience.
Yes.
Hopefully other haunts can take cues from your experience and provide similar ones to women who want to get in haunting everywhere.
Oh, well, thank you guys very much. This has been really wonderful. Best of luck to you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
And to those of you listening at home, once again, this was Holly Cryer.
Chrysler.
Dang it.
So close. It's okay.
I can't read it on the screen. I'm too far back because we have to get into the room and the mic. Oh, gosh. Holly Chrysler.
Yeah.
Thank you very much for joining us, Holly. It's been a wonderful hour.
Appreciate thank you.
And to those of you listening home, we will see you guys next week.